Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to John Talk Radio tonight. The great show lined up for tonight. This is our July 9th show. Getting right through summertime. It's amazing how time is flying. We're going to continue our conversation with James Ferris tonight. We had James on the show earlier this spring, and we had a great show, great conversation. And this show will be dedicated to James Ferris, to his music. We're just going to talk about a lot of different things, and we encourage you to call in 646-595-2483, and we have a chat room open. You can get onto Blog Talk Radio and our website and enter into the chat room, and we like that. We like the interaction. It might be, if you ask me something, it might take me a minute to get to it, but we'll get to it. I'd like to welcome James Ferris to the show. James, are you there?
I'm here, John Talk. Can I call you John Talk?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, actually, I've been called worse, James.
I'll just go with John. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. It's a great day here. It's a nice sunny day in central Ohio. I can't complain. It's just beautiful right now. We had, I don't know if you had it, but we had so much rain this spring that it was like we were in Seattle or something. So it's really nice to see the sunshine.
Oh, it's that way here today, too. For those who are listening, I'm in the suburbs of Chicago in beautiful, illustrious Naperville, Illinois. So not necessarily the center of the universe, but the center of mind at the moment.
Yeah, and I have a lot of friends in the Chicago area. I like visiting there, and it's a great place. And there's so much good music in Chicago. It's just an incredible amount of different styles and great stuff there. So that's
there's
always
an energy here. It's almost sort of like working class meets the intelligentsia all at once. So there's a lot of energy here.
And that's cool because when I interview bands from different places, it's like, you know, I don't know if it makes sense, but sometimes, like, I've interviewed a lot of bands from New York and some from LA and different places in the world, and you just kind of pick up on a vibe in a certain area, and it's kind of cool, I think, you know, even when you can kind of look at that and see what kind of music is created and what kind of, you know, lyrics and things are created through that area. I don't know if geography has much to do with it, but it's kind of interesting.
If you look at what happened in the Seattle area with Kurt Cobain and all the various bands that came out of there in the early 90s, it had such an unmistakable identity to it. You know,
right.
Stone Temple Pilots and all the various, you know, all the bands that came out of there. And just there's such an unmistakable identity. And if you were to go back to the Beatles and the Cavern Club in Liverpool, so the geography, or at least cultural geography, you know, the cultures that spring up in areas,
right,
have got to have something to do with it, which kind of segues, interestingly enough, to the things that are on my mind these days, which is the global nature of the way things are now.
Right.
I mean, I'm just looking so much preoccupied with the changing world, enjoying it, and studying it, and being aware of it, and my technology is geared to that, to the changing world and the changing world culture. My blogs are about the changing world culture and the forces driving it. And I mean, let's say that you had an interest, John, you have to think, what are the odds the very best people for me to discuss this with happen to be on the same block that I'm in central Ohio? The odds are that there's somebody in Oslo and somebody in Hong Kong and someone in Chicago, et cetera, and they are the perfect people for you to share your thought with.
Yeah.
And they're spread out across the world. And so as world cultures evolve and communicate, the nature of geographic realities changes. There's no more Chicago sound. There may be the John Talk sound, which is related to a community that doesn't exist in a particular area. And it's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's really good points. I mean, I completely understand what you're talking about with that, because in this little radio show that I do, when I started doing this 3 years ago, I had very little understanding of what was in front of me. I just knew that I love talking about music, and I that was my passion. So I thought, gosh, what would be better than just to talk to people that are great musicians? I mean, it's like
what a great job.
It's like a dream come true to me, because for what reason I'm not sure, James. People said, "Yeah, I'll talk to you." I thought, "Oh, okay."
And you got me, and I don't know how great they are, but you suckered me right into it.
And it's so much fun, because it's, to me, it's like this great time where I can talk to people, and I can peel back a little bit of what I really want to understand about music. And like when I listened to the intro song tonight. And just for everybody, James, if you want to know more about James Fares, you can go on jamesband.com. And I don't know if there's any other websites, James, but that's the one that I know of. So
there's also Inplex Systems, because it has my blogs on it. IN as in Nancy, PLEX, Systems, SYSTEMS. And although it's more the technology side of me, I'm starting to draw less and less of a line between all of it. So, you know, I would encourage anybody to go anywhere.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. And to check that out. But with that song Free at Last, and I just, you know, heard this first time this week. And I thought, you know, we chatted just a little bit before the show, and I thought, you know, the song has such a, the lyrics are free at last, but it does have a freedom sound to it to me. It sounds like, you know, I can hear songs, James, and I can hear different sounds. And you talked about Liverpool, and you talked about the Beatles. I have a great, you know, passion for that music, and I know bands that are, try everything they can to sound like the Beatles or Beatlesque, the Liverpool sound and all that. And then I hear, but I always like to see what they can do with that and push it a different place, you know, take it somewhere else. And when I heard your song Free at Last, I thought, you know, that's got such a freedom to it. It's got, it just kind of flows. And talk about that song a little bit, James. Is that how you
love to talk about that song? Sometimes it seems like somebody else wrote this stuff, to be really honest. But I had the idea, you know, I started playing a certain guitar chords just for the fun of it. I was playing with my iPad trying out sounds. But I immediately was overwhelmed with the notion that I should try to write a grunge prayer, okay, that I should say, please, Lord, or please, universe, help me to do these things, to let no compass cross my sails, let my life be unlimited, help me with this. Make me free at last, okay? And so I have the contrast of just this spine against the universe, right? The strength that you ask for in a prayer, and then the release of the idea of being free at last. So you have two really contrasting kinds of music. You have this incredibly strong grunge edge that gives way to this almost floating free at last. And then kind of as a tribute to my early days as a Beach Boy, Crying Shames fan, I kind of allude to my you'll find me balanced somewhere on a wire, high above all that I hope for, lost in dreams of surf and choirs. And it has the surf and choir section. And I just loved writing it and making it. I mean, I just thought, you know, I'm not getting paid for this, but yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Oh,
I'm so lucky.
That's a great point. And, you know, I can tell you in John Darlington's head, when I listen to a song and I put it on for the second time right after I hear it the first time, that's a big thing for me, because there'll be songs I'll go, that's pretty good, and I'll move on. You know, I'm listening to all kinds of stuff. If I immediately put it back on and listen to it the second time, that's because I'm thinking, okay, you got to listen to this. And I did.
So what did you make of it? I mean, in other words, I was so immersed in it. You know, it's so personal. I'm so immersed in it. But here, what was your experience of it?
Well, I think that with me, when I hear a song, there's a couple things that happen. The first thing is like the music, and sometimes I hear the lyrics above the music, and sometimes I don't. It just depends on what song it is. I can't even explain it. With this song, to me, I heard the music first, and I heard this very relaxing, spiritual way of communicating. And to me, I immediately relaxed and I started listening. And that's really cool for me, because I listen to so much, James. I like, just this last couple of weeks, I've been kind of into a more of a heavier metal piece, exploring different kinds of bands. I'll go into different genres of music and listen to it. And coming out of that, I thought, yeah, this is a song where, you know, you're talking about spiritual freedom to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got. So.
So certainly, that's one of the overarching elements of it all the way through from beginning to end. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and the joy of making it music these days far surpasses anything ever I've done before, because most often in my life, I've been struggling with it. Gee, can I write a song? Where do I find a melody? What should I write about? And these days, the slightest thought triggers the whole thing.
That's great.
I'll be sitting thinking about, isn't it amazing? What brought John and I talking today? First of all, his parents had to meet, my parents had to meet, the world had to evolve and all that. But also the internet had to be formed and grow up, and all these things finally came to bear on this moment, right?
Right.
And that idea spawned a song recently called Into My Life. Just all the things, the people you pass on the street, they're placed in front of you, and you'll only see so many of them in your lifetime.
Right.
They're more or less poured into your life, you know, and that became a song like in 20 seconds.
Wow.
It was out of control. It just happened, you know. And it used to be just the most grueling, like, I know I want to do this. I just wish I knew how. That's what it used to be.
So now when you get the music and you hear it, do you have what's your means to get that captured so you can pull out?
I quickly, these days, I sing whatever I can into my iPhone recorder.
Okay.
Before it's gone, I dictate into my iPhone recorder. I then rush to Acid or some real quick sketch kind of software. For example, Pro Tools is a great audio application for refining things, but it's not the fastest sketching tool. And if you don't sketch quickly, you forget the very essence of what the thought was too fast. So I go to some quick sketching tool and try to put something there that then reminds me truly of that first moment, that moment in your mind where you had the idea like a blazing light, and if that dulls, you're dead. You'll never get it back. So I try to capture it somehow. And once I do, future can scratchings on some paper is pretty much indelible, and I go after it. But for absolutely no purpose. If anybody's listening to this, I'm amazed. I'm not trying to do anything except be true to what I'm supposed to be doing.
And I think, to me, that's the coolest thing that you can do. Because, you know, I get kind of people will ask me a lot of times, what do you listen to? They know about the show, and they'll ask me, you know, like, what's going on, what's new, and all this. And there's just a lot going on there. But I feel like, you know, it's so important for that honesty and that just for that love of music. And one thing that when you talk about that with your songwriting, James, it's just brought a smile to my face, because it's like, I know some people that are trying very hard to be rich and famous through music, and it's very frustrating for them, because
you know the old joke, right? How do you make a small fortune in the music industry? Start with a large fortune.
that's an old joke, but it's true. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that. But you know, one thing that was interesting to me, in when you were talking about this song, and when you heard this song in like 15 or 20 seconds. Now, when I'm not sure if I can articulate this correctly, but when you're a person you're a musical person and you're a composer, so you have this skill to do this. So this comes to you and you can receive that because you know what it is. You can take that and put it into music. You can write the music, you can put it into the guitar, the whatever you need to do. Do you think that comes from your creativity, or do you think that, I mean, if it would go to someone else, they could hear that, but they couldn't actually use it or put it into a song so people can hear it?
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I do have some thoughts. Back in the day, I would get an idea, write it down on paper, but I couldn't finish it, so I didn't. Okay. Along the way, I started finishing more songs. Okay. And I realized that I became good at finishing. Okay. That in and of itself was a skill, that I knew the way to a finish line. I knew that I was at this point and in this sort of impasse. You know, and I knew that there was a way around that impasse to the finish line. And I knew that I was about 60 or 80% done, and that I needed to I needed to define what I meant by a closing. And I got good at finishing. It was a skill that was separate and apart from inspiration.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So the more you finish, the better you get at finishing, and the more you know that like a well-worn trail, and you say, okay, it's all right. I'm at the point where I take a break. Okay, it's all right. I'm looking for something that's stronger at this one section. So I must think about things that have strength. I need to find the most wicked snare drum. I need to surround myself with there's the idea. Okay, and I know the way. or, you know, this is supposed to be such and such, and I'm not surrounding myself with those elements. And let me step back from it. But you do know the way from beginning to end is really the main point, and you get better at finishing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I've started a lot of things that I haven't finished.
You and me both.
And I need to finish them. But I do know what you're talking about, and that's where I think leadership comes in too, because then you start thinking, people will look at your finished products or what you're doing and think, wow, you know, he knows how to get here. He knows how to do this. And I know you've done some producing, James, and how does that work when you work with other musicians? I mean, when you show them, you know, what you, possibly your confidence is in certain directions you would like their music to go.
Well, a lot of people who ask for a producer, basically, it's interesting. It's a perfect question, because a lot of them don't know the way to the finish line. But they did get a great idea. It's not your idea, it's their idea.
Yep.
And they're asking you to take them to the finish line. That's really, I mean, I think it's a really great question, because that's really what they want. And you have to be very careful not to take them to your finish line, but to help them to get to their finish line.
Yeah, that's a
good
point.
And I think most producers are guilty of taking them to their own finish line. I would say myself in some cases in the past as well, where you think you're doing them a favor by sharing with them your route. But really what they got was their own idea, and they don't know their way to their finish line, and it's almost better if you abstract your knowledge, abstract your notions of what a pathway is, and help them find their pathway. And I think a great producer really does that. I think that when Walter Becker produced Ricky Lee Jones,
okay,
she had an interesting comment. She said, well, we spent about 3 or 4 months making male music. And then he finally realized that we were going to do music that sounded like me. And you can imagine that. You can imagine Walter Becker getting the coolest drummers and laying down the baddest grooves. You know, for those who don't know Walter's name, he's half of Steely Dan.
Right.
And just laying down some great stuff that had nothing to do with her personality, but was great. And it took him a while to reorient himself and float some vocals over a light guitar riff that was her and create her record, but he did it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And also, I think it's, you know, I've seen it work where people have told me when I've interviewed folks about how that they've gone into, they said, okay, I really want to do this, and people with money or people with that can support their ideas will say, yeah, you can do this if, you know, you go this direction, or if you do this, or if you sound more like Justin Bieber or what. I don't know.
At that point, you're an automaton, and I have almost zero patience for it. I mean, if you watch American Idol, they're not turning out real artists. They're turning out performers with very particular skills.
Yep.
Can you dance? Can you, do you fit wardrobe well? John Lennon would not have won American Idol. Okay, think about that. Okay, John Lennon would not have come in with Imagine and all the amazing songs he wrote, would not have won American Idol.
Oh, that's true.
So deal with it from there. You know, you have to say, at some point John Lennon would have walked away from it, from what I can imagine in his life, okay, and said, this is ridiculous.
Right.
You know, Bob Dylan had a phrase, I try so hard to be just like I am, but everybody wants me to be just like them.
Yeah.
And you have to be like who you are, you know. I'm pretty good at that, by the way. I think I got that part down.
Oh, that's a great point, because it's like I just can't stomach that, and it's that whole American Idol thing. I don't know what it is. I can't watch it. I can't listen to it. But people will. It's very popular. But, you know, you made some good points. And also, I'll throw a lyric out that I remember. Rod Stewart, I combed my hair in a thousand ways and came out looking just the same. I always liked that.
because, I like your comments, John, but you were just a little pitchy. Okay? Sorry. it was a good comment, but you were just a little pitchy. Sorry.
That's a good one.
Let's see what you can do about that. Okay.
Oh, I like that. But it's well, you know, we got so much to talk about. I know one of the things when we talked the last time, James, we touched on, you were saying how much influence that you were getting from, I believe it was Les Paul. And like in 1951 or something like that.
Well, I made a big point of finding him and shaking his hand in New York City at one point.
Oh, wow.
But really, Les Paul was a very homespun guy, okay? But the genius comes in all sorts of flavors, and he didn't invent the electric guitar, but he expanded it, and he invented multi-track recording, which is amazing in and of itself, and he wrote hit records with his wife, Mary Ford.
Right.
With multi-tracked harmonies, her singing with herself, him playing backgrounds, parts, and harmonies. They were great records, so he was a great inventor. He was a great producer. And so they brought him in front of one of the science guilds, and he said, you know, what we're doing now is recording on these, what seemed to me to be the wrong mediums. I see us eventually recording in light. He foresaw the laser.
Wow.
As a means of, you know, and it was just him following that intuition. Why can't you harmonize with yourself? We have recording heads. Can't I configure them in a way that I can play harmonies with myself? We have light. Light is a medium of energy. Why do we need to use magnetic energy? And so I found myself trying to think like him, okay? And so when I saw him, I mean, it would just emulate the general thought form, not to be as good as he is, just to think that that's the way to think. So when I saw a computer and somebody plugged in a second mouse, I said, why don't you get a second cursor? Why can't people all use this computer at the same time? Why can't they network from computer to computer and work together as if it was one computer? And I started to attack those issues, hoping that I was emulating Les Paul in some vague respect, and that's pretty pretentious, so my apologies. I ended up with some technology, which is now in the form of a product called Inplex, and I'm not plugging that in any great extent here, working with Dan Hagedorn and the other members of my company, to provide a technology where I can work with anybody on the planet in real time, and you jump on my computer and I see your cursor, we share the whatever we're doing, or I jump on yours with a couple of other people, and it's just one of those extensions. It's one of those extensions.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, because when you were talking about when Les Paul started asking, why can't we do this? And I know that, you know, you and I have talked, and this is exactly what you're doing, and I think that that's what's missing in a lot of music today, is that creativity where people are thinking, gosh, I want to sound like this, or I want to look like that, or I want to do this. If I could just, you know, be like LL Cool J, or I could have that money, or that, if I could do that. And they're looking for, you know, they've already boxed in their whole creativity right there. It's not their creativity, in my opinion, anymore. It's theirs. It's trying to get to where somebody else has already gotten. But when you're seeing that with Les Paul and the things that you've done with your company, you're starting to think about, okay, this is cool stuff. I really like this. I like that. That's awesome. But why can't we do this? And then, James, talk about what kind of audience, because a lot of people have ideas, but you have to have somebody that receives those and can work with you to get that completed.
Well, The my newest thought on audience. First of all, I am blessed to have a bunch of wonderful people who saw me play when I was very young in the band The Crying Shames, who came to understand me back at that time. They just kind of accepted me as quirky. It's like there's the lead singer, and then there's James. James is the quirky one. Lord knows what he's going to do next, okay? And that's fine. That's just James being James. So here they followed me, and I show up once a year, and about more than 2,000 people come out of the woodwork and watch me play, and thank God for every one of them. And then I've also started thinking about that thought that we talked about earlier, which is, if you had an idea, what would the odds be of the best people to discuss it with being on that block
right.
in Central Ohio? So now I put out my song. It's like you're playing two songs, I believe, today.
Right.
One was Free at Last, and another one is The Cafe Evermore.
Right.
Okay, very different songs. But I put them out online, and I just put them in Facebook. And I get maybe 30 to 40 people, but it's always a different 30 to 40.
But that's cool.
So these two songs are very different. And you find the people who are in that Cafe Evermore mood who had caught. And they say, yeah, where have you been and who are you? This is really exactly the way I'm feeling, okay? And you realize that using the internet and using your outreach and being sensible about how you do that, you invite people to participate. And one person said, could I do this and maybe do a different version? I said, sure, what do I care?
Oh,
I wasn't trying to make a dime on it to begin with, you know. So, I mean... you know, so just opening the doors. I have a favorite artist in this regard. Her name is Imogen Heap.
Okay.
And what she did, it's Imogen Heap, H-E-A-P. And what she did was she opened up her process to her fans. She said, could you send in your favorite sounds? So people sent in sounds of, like, tea kettles boiling and whatever they liked. And she started using them as the seeds of her new song. Then she said, I'm having a hard time with the middle eight of the song, the bridge. Could you send in your ideas? And people sent in their ideas, and she used some and paid them and credited them. And finally, she ended up with kind of a collective piece of thousands of people and released it. And, of course, millions of people bought it because they all felt involved and invested in the
process.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And I think that's a good model for how you can, you know, how could she find in her block, in her town, the people who had responded that way, but globally she found them. And it's a global community now, and people from Japan sent in music, and Europe, and the States, and they all had their contribution, and they were all featured on the site and acknowledged, and talk about a sense of community.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I have to check that out. That means a lot, because you're talking about now that people feel like they have a part of it, and it's like, wow, you know, I did that. That was my sound, or that was my idea. And then that's really cool. I'm going to have to check that out. But
they're owners. And if you go to it's Imogen, I-M-O-G-E-N, Heap, H-E-A-P, you can go to her site, Imogen Heap, and she'll be there. You can look on YouTube and just see – you know, every one of her videos got millions and millions of hits.
Wow.
Okay. And she did this on her own. She had a record deal, and she did good stuff. And she, at one point, was realizing, I read somewhere, that she went to the hotel, got off the airplane, went to the hotel, got on stage, was herded onto stage on time, performed, got herded off the stage, sent to an airplane, and didn't talk to a single one of her fans. She didn't have a dialogue. And Jimmy Iovine, one of the greatest producers, said, this is the only industry that has no relationships with its customers.
Wow.
Sony releases a CD, and they don't care who buys it. They don't know who buys it. They don't want to know. Okay?
Yep.
Whereas she knew everybody. She knew every single person who bought this new piece.
Wow.
And wrote to them and thanked them and took their ideas, and she started having a relationship with her customers, a real relationship, and it made all the difference. And on a global community level, I think that's where everything is headed, technology, media, everything.
Yeah, that's really a good point. I mean, I think that it's one of the incredible things to me. There are people that I would think that in my mind are, wow, you know, whether it's in music or whether it's people that I work with or whatever they might be. And I found sometimes that people are unapproachable. They put up boundaries. They, you know, I don't know what that's all about, but, you know, okay, if you want to talk to me, you got to call these people and all this kind of stuff. But then to me, it's just the coolest thing in the world to talk to somebody who has possibly reached places that I would like to go that is open and free about it. And, you know, it's like today, James, our conversation. I mean, to me, this is a great thing because we're talking about a lot of things that are very important to me. Music is very important to me. Technology has been something I've been involved in for a long time, and I've seen it grow, and I've seen, you know, people that have grabbed a hold of it and have gone. I've seen people also, James, that are afraid of it and that have pulled back and that have not, you know.
And in today's world, that is the great divide. And it's an unfortunate one for the people who are unable to grab onto it because the world is rapidly adapting to those who can.
Right.
And, you know, so, okay, so if you take a good look at it, I've got a friend, Kurt, who doesn't need technology, but he's one of the original, like, pioneer guys. He built his own house himself. He created his own water grabbing system, his own solar heat, his own, you know, and if you're that person, then you're pretty much safe where you are. Okay. But in the flow of society, it's a little bit different. It's a state where things are not going to work too well if you're not part of the flow of information. That's a shame.
Yep. And also I was thinking when I was, you know, reading some of the information you gave me, you were talking about how that, you know, the corporate boardroom and how that has all changed, how, and it really spoke to me about how, you know, it used to be all physical. You know, you would get up in the morning, you would get dressed, you would go to work, you would see everybody, you would be in a room with people. The body language would mean a lot. Personalities would mean a lot. The way people dress would mean things. And then that's all changed. It really has changed with my life because I've worked from home for probably the last 5 or 6 years. And it's a whole different culture and how that people communicate.
Let me ask you a question. I think it was IBM that did this. And that's why I'm asking. But I think it was IBM that decided they had a huge office building and they told everybody they could work for, finally, you can work from wherever you want to work. And they gave a tour of the place and there was not a single soul in the building.
Oh, that's possible.
It was on television and therefore it must be true. No, but they did a tour and the only people who was there was like the janitor. You know, and he was trying to figure out why he was cleaning all this stuff because no one uses it, you know. And it was just like a ghost town because everyone was checking their iPad for the latest chatter in their particular field, way more up to date than they were in the office. They were texting from their cell phone to various clients. They were active, but in a totally different realm, in a totally different way. And more business was getting done. More projects were coming in on time. It was just amazing.
Yeah, and that's exactly true. Now, how do we see that? I can visualize it pretty cool in my head with corporate business. How does that translate into the music industry and the music business?
Well, okay. My thoughts on that, of course, you know that I'm going to think of something. it used to be that the more people you involved, the less you had, okay? It used to be that, first of all, you had an idea to play some music, but you needed a drummer and a bass player, et cetera. And they all got a cut because they were in the band. And then you needed a road manager, so he got a cut. Then you found a manager, and he got a huge cut. And he hired a music attorney who got a cut. And then they found a publisher who got a cut. And then they finally all got packaged through some distributor and label, and they got a huge cut and gave you a bad bank loan to make a record. And so finally your stuff was together and everybody thought you were doing well and you were broke. Okay. And you were, essentially a prisoner to all of those elements. So the equation was the more people you brought into your creative world, the less you had.
Yep.
And that's completely turned on its ear now. Now, the more people you bring into your creative world online, the more you have. Okay? The more they say, wow, this guy's great, let me tell my friends. The more they say, hey, I had an idea for a song, or your song gave me an idea, do you want to cut? They're more generous. It's just easier. Okay?
Yeah.
The more they network, the more they, and in the case of, for example, Imogen Heap, the more they feel invested in what you're doing. They write in an idea, you write back and say, thanks, good idea. When you put out the CD, maybe, you know, the word CD is outdated. Okay, John, here's a quiz. When was the last time you got in your car, drove to a store, stood in line, purchased a CD, and came home to play it on what?
Yeah, it's been a long time ago, and I think
now ask someone under 30, and now ask someone under 20. Okay, when they'll look at you like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So now when you create your digital collection, which is what you're creating, a collection of digital works, and you offer it, you offer people also the opportunity to be invested, to suggest ideas for your CD, quote unquote, your graphics cover. Adobe Air allows you to make a virtual CD cover that's a three-dimensional model, and you can actually change it every day. So you might tune into your favorite artist's CD cover to find out how they've changed their graphics today.
Wow.
So people are more invested. Now the equation is the complete opposite. The more people you involve, the more, you know, direct and honest you are with that group of people, the more they tell other people that this seems like perhaps it might be the real deal. Let me know what you think.
Oh, I think that's a huge thing, because there'll be people that will they'll talk to me and they'll say, man, you have got to listen to this because this is just incredible. And like I think we talked in the other show that we had, James, how back when I was growing up, if that happened, first of all, it was like I had a little transistor radio that got just a few stations, and I couldn't really hear any good music because it was exactly what they were playing, and maybe I could hear one or two out of 20 or 30 if that. And then if I did hear something really cool, I'd have to go to a department store someplace far away from where I lived, because I, you know, lived kind of out in the sticks. And it was a big deal for me to just get music and listen to it.
And now, if you were the same exact person in exactly the same situation now, you would have the entire digital library of the world at your fingertips.
Right. And that's totally mind-blowing to me. It's like, what do you think, though, also, James? Do you think that with Joe or Jane listener, when they're a person that would be receptive to really good music, but they have now is there an overload or a lot of things for them to listen to, and where, you know, people have it, then it possibly become impatient and oh, I've heard that, maybe that, you know, I'll just listen to that, yeah, that's pretty cool, now I've got 40, 50 songs I can listen to. Does that make any sense? I mean, do you think that plays into it where it's not as selective as it used to be? And I think it's a good thing that we have variety, but I don't know if people get spoiled because they hear so many things and they hear a lot of good things and they may not appreciate all that. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Well, I think, one, there is a danger, a financial danger, that the American Idol types and the Sony types are taking over the advertising on the key outlets, which are iTunes and Amazon.
Right.
So when you go to iTunes, you see Lady Gaga, who's a talented woman, but, you know, you see the big artists only. Okay, the winner of this year's American Idol seems like a nice guy. Lady Gaga, the latest Beyonce interview as she reinvents her career, and it's all that stuff, right?
Right.
But if you get out into the, you'll find, it's sort of a numbers game. Whereas before, the potential was to have maybe 20 James fans, okay? Even though Lady Gaga is getting the majority of the iTunes space, let's just for example, I still have thousands of people I never otherwise would have had.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and so I'm connected. It's a big world, and you know I'm connecting to people, and the comments are so intelligent. I mean, you're not talking to like your fans. You're talking to highly intuitive and intelligent people who have thoughts, and so the dialogue is different. Okay, I mean, they may appreciate your music, but the dialogue is a different dialogue.
Correct.
And,
yep.
And so. Even with all of the overload, it's a better world. That's the way I would put it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just sometimes think of that. and I say this because of some of my kids, and they'll be jumping around from all this different music, and I'm thinking, man, I didn't have that opportunity, you know, to listen to all the different things that they listen to. And it's just amazing to me. There's always something new and something different coming out. And I think that's really cool. Well, why don't we play Cafe Evermore? Would you like to talk about that for a minute, James, before?
It was sort of a song that I wrote to honor my arrival in a state of zen in my life, where, like, I finally woke up probably like a week ago and realized that, you know, there's – here I am. I'm lost in this world of Zen, and really there's no trail that I wanted to follow anyway. So now I'm finally living in a kind of a land of silence with beautiful rain that's always pouring. And I'm calling it my own Cafe Evermore. And it was just sort of a song I wrote about finally achieving that state of mind. You know, I'm not saying that I hold on to it at all moments. By any means, that I don't have anxieties, but you know, you can't. Oh, there's a line in here. So something, you can't leave. You can't return to what's now unknown. Meaning, there's no way to go back to a place. It's different now. Like you can't go home again. So you're looking for a memory that no longer comes to mind, and all you're left with is a hint of a place that was once so well defined. And once you accept that, you can live right now, just kind of be. So I thought I'd make something really, really peaceful that kind of personified that.
Well, our guest tonight on John Talk Radio is James Fares. And if you'd like to go out on jamesband.com and you can, there are downloads and video links and all kinds of stuff connected to James Fares Band. And also, we're going to play Cafe Evermore. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about the video and the visual part of music and how that connects in with the thought of the song and how it's seen from the creator of the song to how the person that receives the song. So we'll be back in just a minute with the rest of the interview. This is James Fares song, Cafe Evermore, and we'll be back in just a second. That was Cafe Evermore. Our guest tonight is James Fares. And that's a beautiful song, James.
Oh, thank you, John.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. And if you would like to know more about James Fares and James Band, you can log on to jamesband.com. And
that's spelled with a Z, J-A-M-E-Z. We have about 4 sites under construction, but you know, the best thing to do is maybe look for James Band on YouTube, J-A-M-E-Z-B-A-N-D, and you're just going to find a ton of stuff, I think, maybe.
Right, and that's what I wanted to talk about, James, was you have a lot of really cool stuff out on YouTube. And we've talked about a lot of different mediums tonight in this interview. We've talked about the internet and the different ways of people communicating and getting the music industry is kind of getting turned upside down. How when you write a song and it's, you know, in your mind, it's musical, it's out there, how do you put that into the video form, into the visual form, and how is that choice made to decide what you want it to represent?
Well, that's an interesting question, because everything always starts with a video in my mind. Everything.
Wow.
It never starts from a set of chord changes. It's always a visual thing that I saw, that I chase, and I immediately am writing the theme music for. And so then you do the song part, and there's no way you can possibly recreate, or at least I can't recreate that visual that you had in your own mind. So you really, and you know, what I try to add on these YouTube videos is just the mood, and I try to reinforce the mood and put enough hints of the mood in the visual. But if I had my way, I'd do a mind meld and try to get the visual to be exactly what I first saw. It's almost always everything I do is a description of something I clearly thought in my mind or clearly occurred to me visually in my mind first. I can't think of any other way that I've done it.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Have you ever done that through dreams?
Yes. And I dream every night, and some dreams, I guess, I kind of categorize as my mind working things out. They might be a little chaotic. They might not make literal sense. But you sort of see the process of sort of taking various elements of my life and trying to just put them into some sort of form. And, you know, that part that you remember. But other times, it's an absolutely vivid thought that you wake up and say, well, I don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose that. You know, and then other times it's almost it's being aware of the dream part of being awake, meaning like a little thing happens. You're looking at your keyboard and you're just touching the keyboard, you know, I mean your computer typewriter, and you're touching the keys in a certain order, and you realize that's sort of like a melody. If you could actually hear that, you know, from A to W to T is up and then back down. Gee, yeah, that's interesting to me. What would this word sound like as a melody? If you actually were to look at it that way, you know, and just that little daydreaming moment might lead you to actually spell out some words and pretend they were melodies. And then maybe the words to the song would be about that in some obscure way. I'm writing a song right now. I'm just making this up, okay? But it can be that daydreaming kind of thought that you kind of have to realize is just as valid as any other thought. It's just as valid as sitting down and studying and coming up with the synthesis of various forms of thought. This is just as valid. It's just a different aspect of it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I also, you know, like when I was talking earlier about how that, you know, when you were talking about just relaxing and letting your mind just kind of go where it needs to go. It's going to go where, you know, it's not going to be, well, it could be directionless in my case, but when you think about, you know, musicians that sit down, that are incredible musicians that are structured, they can create music that is very amazing to me, but is it creative? And that's the thing that I feel when I hear creative music. I think it might not be, you know, the most structured music, or, you know, somebody could maybe tear that down. But to me, it's like, wow, you know, where did that note come from? Where
Well, let me tell you, there's a great old standard. I hate to interrupt you, but I just had this thought. There's a song called Isn't It Romantic? It's like from the 40s or 30s.
Okay.
Okay, and it's Isn't It Romantic? No, it's like that. But they say music in the night, and then they define it as a dream that can be heard. Those are the words to the song. Isn't It Romantic? Music in the night, a dream that can be heard. And to me, really creative music is a dream that can be heard. It's like leftover from that. Whoever wrote that song in the 30s or whatever it was, that was a perfect description.
Yeah, that is. Well, that's cool. And I think if anyone has any questions, you can call into the show. We just got a couple minutes left, but it's 646-595-2483. And James, we're down to the last couple minutes of the interview. Is there anything that you would like to say to your fans, or anything you would like to say that we've missed, or anything you'd just like to make a
I would like to touch
shout
on
out?
One thing. Okay. Yeah, I would just like to make a touch on one thing. You were saying, about the nature of kids and the glut of music and the glut of information that's coming into them.
Right.
But there is, the Japanese have a concept of something called MUDA, M-U-D-A. And what it has to do with is collaborative consumption, and which is what you're talking about there. That's what's happening these days is collaborative consumption. And basically what collaborative consumption does is it creates a relentless hunt for an eradication of inefficiencies in any system. That's what MUDA is. And so in a way, as chaotic as it is, you can imagine that all of this information is part of a global beginning to eradicate the inefficiencies and the incorrectness of any system. And it's beautiful because nobody's controlling it. As soon as you've got a government or an agency or a political party trying to control it, it all goes to hell in a handbasket, but this is not controllable. And so it's the human species doing it, and it is, believe it or not, a beautiful thing. And that's what I've got to offer. John, it is always such a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, James, it was great time talking tonight. The hour went by really good, and I just appreciate it. And I would like just to encourage everyone to go out and listen to James's music. It's jamesbandwithaz.com is the site, and also go out on YouTube, and there's a channel out there with all of James's music out there. It's under James Band. And James, it's a pleasure talking to you. It's great music. Keep it up, and we'll have to do this again.
We will have part three, and it'll be just as much fun.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, and you take care, and we'll
Thank
talk
you,
to you. And everybody have a great evening. Thanks for listening to John Talk Radio. And this Wednesday night, I will be on with an interview with E2 Angels at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. So everybody have a great time, and thank you so much for listening to John Talk Radio. Good night,
John.
James.
Good night.
Good night.